Welcome to the D1 Softball Podcast. I'm your host, Tara Henry. As always, we are excited to bring you the best of the best in college softball. After the show, head on over to d1softball.com for all the latest stories, coaching scoop, international softball news, fall schedules, and more. If you subscribe today, you can use Podcast 20, that's P-O-D-C-A-S-T 20 for 20% off an annual subscription. We are excited for today's first episode of the season with none other than University of Washington head coach and Team USA head coach, Heather Tarr. I'm now joined by my co-host, Rhiannon Podkey-Ree. How are you doing? Happy fall ball.
I know, we're already back. It's exciting. The weather's starting to, be the weather. Hopefully starting to turn. I'm thinking that it's maybe starting to turn and we're getting some fall reports going. So it's amazing how quickly it goes, right? You know, just time flies. This is softball, but it's great to be back. How are you doing?
I'm great. We've got a lot to kind of cover to actually get into the whole entire summer, but we're going to make it pretty brief for everybody, just a little bit easier to digest. We'll go through coaching changes, some transfer news, and then get into some international softball as well. We'll start off with the biggest coaching changes. And Rhi, I think the biggest news just happened a week or two ago with the retirement of one of the most legendary head coaches, well, if not the most of all time in Division I softball.
Yeah, Michigan's Carol Hutchins stepped down, retired finally to the life of the retirement, which she's been enjoying. We've seen, if you follow, she's golfing and laking and doing all that fun stuff that she loves to do and surprising players at AU softball. I think I was more surprised by the timing than the actual announcement, because I could see, you know, she's obviously had so much longevity, such an icon in the sport, and with some of the other coaches like Mike Kendrea and, you know, just legend stepping down, you kind of saw that it was coming. But the timing was very surprising and kind of caught me off guard. But what you really can't even say anything. It's just her career is tremendous. It's, and there's stuff on the site. People can read all the tributes and stuff we've done and just the news stories and everything. But, you know, more than just softball, just Carol Hutchins is in women's sports in totality. She's basically Title IX in a person, you know, in terms of just the magnitude from her own playing career to her coaching career. And she won't be stopping that part. She'll still be, I'm very confident, she'll still have a voice out there in the larger landscape. But man, what she's done for the sport, you really can't. What she did for Michigan, you know, not a place where softball weather, you know, it's not easy to build a program in that area of the country. And she kind of set the example that you can do that there, and obviously captured national title and was just extremely successful. And just like I said, there's not going to be anyone to ever be able to replace her, and what she's done for the game, just, you can't say enough. And there's just not enough gratitude that softball could give her for how far she's helped to move that sport.
That was great to see as well. So that's University of Michigan. We had a few other big time programs switching, you know, head coaches. The other big job this offseason, Texas A&M. And that was a huge job. That the coaching search seemed to go on for quite some time. And Tricia Ford, the former ASU skipper, gets the nod over there. And to see Joe Evans actually head on out here to Santa Barbara, Rhi, I know near and dear to your heart.
Mighty Gauchos, baby. I'm a Gaucho alum. And she's going
to. I'm pretty stoked because I'm going to have to make that drive up to Isla Vista. So we'll see how Joe does here with Rhi's alma mater, Santa Barbara. But I think that Texas A&M job was the biggest one for me. Rhi, what else you got?
Yeah, definitely that A&M job. Everyone was kind of wondering who they were going to lure with that big oil money they've got down there. You know, they Jimbo Fisher money. He's got like 7 ranches. So maybe they could have had him sold one back and hired a few coaches. But yeah, Tricia Ford, obviously Arizona State, which leaves a big void in the pack, you know, the Pac-12, which, you know, whatever that'll become within a few years. But yeah, there was a lot of names rumored, and she ended up taking it and trying to keep players there and trying to rebuild that program, you know, because obviously they haven't been quite as successful as some past years, but thought they made some progress these last few years. She's got players there, but Obviously loss we'll talk about later with the transfers, Haley Lee, for, you know, which that was her graduate year, sixth year, you know, it's not like a fifth year, sorry. So she's just, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what she does. She's going to have a lot more resources there. As great as ASU is, just Texas A&M and the SEC money is just different, and the resources and that beautiful stadium they have and the staff she's trying to put together. So definitely was a, that was a job that I think a lot of people were interested in. And I think some other people got raises because they were candidates for that job as well. So it sometimes helps everyone in the long run, because they get, you know, their school tries to keep them. So they get a nice little bonus there.
Yeah, what's the saying? It just means more in the SEC. I think.
Yeah, my thing is sometimes it just means a little too much more sometimes.
Speaking of the SEC, another Stephanie Van Brackel of Alabama heading over to Memphis for the head coaching job. Another big kind of change that we're going to see there. And then Kiki Stokes O'Connor, who we saw in Athletes Unlimited, she came back and played pro ball. She'll be at Kansas City and then Michigan State too. Longtime head coach Jackie Joseph is no longer with the Spartans. And we've got Sharonda McDonald there heading in for Michigan State in the Big Ten. So those are some big coaching changes. Ree, anybody else to add?
There's a host. I think there's still three jobs open, and not surprisingly, two of them are HBCUs, because just the trouble they have trying to hire and get the resources is an ongoing problem that I hope soon gets fixed. But I think we still have three more. I think Cal State Bakersfield is the third one. So yep. We still got a few out there that we're chasing. But if you need to check the whole, we got the whole list on d1softball.com. And we even have all the assistant coaches, which that's a heck ton every year. My goodness. Every day I see a new assistant being hired. So
Yeah. Head on over to the site. Ree's got you covered. I mean, we've got the coaches carousel, actually. Brady Vernon. We got to give credit where credit's due. Brady does all the hard work with the head coach carousel and the assistant coach carousel. There's an actual tab on the site. So that's coaching changes. Now we're going to get into some transfers, because we know how this is such a hot topic, especially now in college softball. I'm going to start off with, I think the biggest transfer of the year, arguably, is Alex Sirocco from Michigan to Oklahoma. So OU picks up Alex Sirocco, like Ree said earlier, Haley Lee, Sydney Sanders, and Alan Tornos from ASU. The Sooners are just reloading, it seems like. And that would be my biggest transfer class of the year.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think we had, you know, obviously we were ranked number one. We had a transfer, you know, rankings list in terms of classes. Yeah, definitely. Sirocco and Lee, I think you could argue this is the two biggest ones in terms of, well, I mean, Sydney Sanders. I mean, the whole class is ridiculous. Like the, just, you know, they, every year they seem to, I mean, the program like that, eventually people want to join it, you know, with a chance to win a title. And I'm always interested to see, though, because obviously kids need to kind of leave for that spots to open up. So it's just interesting how you try to balance that, how coaches, how now they're leaving spots open because you don't want to over recruit. So then you have to kick kids out. So it's a very fascinating dynamic, but yeah, just reloading is what we would call the Sooners here. I think I might vote them number one right now. I'm going out on a limb, but I may do that. Like I may, if I had to vote right now on next year's, you know, if we had an early look at the 2023 rankings. But yeah, the heck of a class there.
So that's OU. Another big class, the UCLA Bruins, they picked up a handful of transfers in from Arizona, which is quite odd, and Oregon. They've got Brooke Yanez. They've got Palacios. Mionio and Sid. So they've got another great transfer class in the UCLA Bruins. I know, Ree, you chatted a little bit about those transfers with Coach Inouye Perez.
Yeah, yeah. Brooke Yanez, Charlize Palacios, Janelle Mionio, and Rachel Sid. I mean, I can, it is interesting, like the rivals, although, you know, UCLA will be playing in the Big Ten pretty soon. So won't be quite as hard of feelings, but most of that's a great class. I mean, Brooke Yanez, pitcher, Oregon, sat out last year with the injury. She's kind of a SoCal girl, wanted to kind of play closer to home. Always, you know, had the, you know, she's, this is actually her second transfer. She started UC Davis to Oregon and now to UCLA for her final season. So yeah, it's interesting. I know the two Arizona kids, they made their decisions independently. I spoke with them about that and how they kind of just decided like it wasn't kind of contingent upon each other, kind of like the Arizona State kids going to OU. But yeah, UCLA raiding the rest of the pack before they leave for the Big Ten. It's like, here, we're taking the money. You guys stay back and we'll just raid your players before we leave too, just to make it a little bit more. But it's the nature of the beast now. So yeah, so that's a pretty talented class too.
And another transfer news, Max Exodus from Alabama. You just saw player after player. You got Jenna Lord, Dallas Goodnight, Abby Doerr, Megan Bloodworth, Lexi Kilfoyle, and Savannah Woodard all leaving Alabama. But if you didn't catch this, I want to just read out Montana Fouts, her tweet that she, where she announced she was staying. This is just on Twitter. She said, this is Montana Fouts. You'll see me proudly wearing the A next year. I don't have to think twice about that. Murph, not only are you a Hall of Fame coach, but you're a Hall of Fame man. I'll die on that hill, so bury me in Dixie. Sweet home Alabama, roll tide, and amen. I mean, if that's not somebody stating their case, I don't know who is. I mean, I love that from Montana Fouts. I just, gosh, what a fire she has. And I'm excited to see the Crimson Tide play next season.
In the most Southern way too. And then she has it. And then a few weeks later, I think she signed an NIA deal with a tree stand company for hunting. So you can hunt from tree stands and Montana Fouts will be there with you. Maybe she can lead some guided hunts. I love what she's doing. Like, her brand is her brand and she is outdoors woman. So, you know, she's got the cowboy, you know, cowgirl hat, the boots. And yeah, it didn't surprise me. I mean, there is that. I mean, again, every transfer situation is different. I don't want to ever, everyone has their own reasons. So the whole loyalty versus non-loyalty, there's always going to be some of that, but she's happy there. She loves it. More power to her. They'll get some kids in, they'll recruit some kids. You know, there's like Lexi Kilfoyle is probably the one that, you know, is going to hurt them probably the most. She's going to Oklahoma State. So, yeah, I love that. I mean, like you said, we saw a few of those with Arizona State as well. Some of the, you know, I'm staying here. It's kind of crazy now. You have to kind of like proclaim that you're staying at your school, like just so people know, which that's where we've come in all sports, not just softball. So
it's no longer you're expected to stay at school like it once was. Now you just got to remind everybody that you are staying, that you're not transferring. So different world, but that's the biggest transfer news we'll leave you with in off season. We don't want to spend too much time. You can head on over to the site. Again, we've got the transfer tracker up on d1softball.com. So that's transfer news. Then we'll head into international softball and pro softball. We'll start with pro. We had the WPF had their season, this summer season, which was more of the Vipers playing the USSSA Pride. So a lot of exhibition games against one another. And then we had Athletes Unlimited with Deja Mulupola taking the crown there, and AUX, so their special series with Danielle O'Toole, which I really enjoyed Athletes Unlimited this summer. And again, we've got recaps on all those games up on the site for Athletes Unlimited. And I was skeptical. I'm going to be honest, Rhea, I was skeptical of that league when it first came about. And I do think they've done an incredible job just highlighting these incredible athletes all season long, all summer long, and really enjoyed the point system and watching them switch teams every week.
Yeah, I was right there with you when they first announced it, like before I saw it. I'm always all about pro opportunities. I'm a team person. That's just always how I've been. Like, I didn't understand, like, I was wondering how, if it was going to be more selfish in nature, but it's totally not. The way they incorporate the points to make the team part a huge, big part of it too. And they empower the athletes to kind of pick the teams and make the decisions. I've been completely sold on it. I love it. This was the best season I've seen. The quality of play was amazing. Every game was really entertaining. The announcing crews, everything is first class. Having that ESPN deal is huge. Such a big, big, big bonus for fans out there, because you can see all the games and you've got a professional crew working every game and knowledge of the sport. And man, Arizona, though, the Arizona players, they showed out. The Wildcats were like right up at the top of the standings the whole time. So, yeah, I agree with you. I'm completely sold on it. I really enjoy it. And the thing is, the players love it. And that's really, to me, all that matters. They feel empowered. They love it. There's so many of them that shout with praise and they're getting paid for it. And it's a really cool experience. And there's a lot of fans showing up. So I just think it's going to keep getting bigger and better. So it's pretty cool to see.
So that's pro news. And then we'll head into some international news. Team USA had three big, tournaments this summer. Started with Canada Cup, then headed over to Birmingham, the World Games. And then it wasn't really a tournament. It was more of a series with Japan, but we'll get into that with our guest of the day. But again, international softball back on the docket, trying to get it back in 2028. Ree, what did you see this summer from Team USA and the three different squads that they chose to have play this summer?
Yeah, what to me was it was hard to see all the games. Obviously, they weren't all streamed, which is the kind of bump. But the cool part for me was just the transitional, the generations we're seeing, all the college players. I mean, Ali Carter was about the only one that was not college for some of those rosters, as we got down there. And it's kind of cool to see them kind of get their first taste of it, that big level, and kind of see the ones that are like Kelly Maxwell was a standout in the circles we've all seen in college. I was just really, really impressed, just kind of really interesting to see some of these college players stepping up and taking the place of the generations, like the Kat Ostermans. And I mean, Monica Abbott, we don't know. She could pitch till she's 56. We don't know. Every day you kind of wait to see, but it was kind of a changing of the guard with this fresh team and fresh faces and just getting to see how they experienced it. And especially their trip to Japan, which was a really cool cultural experience. So, but again, I didn't get to see as many games I would have liked, and just kind of reading about it. So I'm hoping to actually get to see more games at some point to see the team on the field. But it's kind of neat to have some of that fresh blood in there and kind of new coaching staff and new players and a really college heavy flavor, which is kind of cool.
So with that said, we'll head into our interview of the week, our first interview with head coach Heather Tarr from University of Washington. Bat Club USA is a subscription service from premium baseball and softball equipment. In 2016, co-founders Eric and Oscar realized there's a huge performance gap between top-tier bats and the ones most people can actually afford. So they started Bat Club. Since then, parents have been able to give their kids the best bats in the game at an affordable monthly payment they can afford. Learn how you can give your little slugger access to the best bat for their swing starting at $20 per month by visiting Bat Club USA.
And we want to welcome Washington head coach and U.S. national team head coach Heather Tarr to the D1 Softball Podcast. Tarr began her inaugural year at the helm of Team USA this summer with competitions at the Canada Cup, which the Americans won gold, and with the USA Japan series, which is a really cool series that took place in Japan. Japan won 2-1, but it was super close games and very exciting. We didn't get to see it, unfortunately, but we watched play by play. So it sounded like a great opportunity. So thank you so much for being our inaugural guest this season on the D1 Softball Podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be the inaugural 2023 person.
I know we definitely came out the 2023 season really early here with all the fall reports we get going. We get going early here at D1 Softball. I guess I would love to start right there because you're just coming off the summer. You're starting fall, obviously, but how was the first few months being in charge of Team USA? I know you've been on staffs before, but, kind of this transitional period, how was it? How's the first few competitions been for you?
Well, fortunately for me, I had good mentors, good people to follow because it actually felt like I fit right in, but I would credit the athletes specifically. Chris Sebring, the director of national teams, Craig Kress, USA Softball as a whole has, you kind of just step into the role. And I was fortunate enough, like I said, to be around great people, Laura Berg, Tariah Flowers, Howard Dobson in years past, so that I understood how it flowed and what it was. And you're just kind of a piece of it. It's not all about me. I get to, the title, but certainly the athletes, it's all about the athletes and the program. And people like Hannah Flippin, who I relied heavy on this summer, Haley McClenney, of course, Monica Abbott, Ali Carta, those ones that have been with the program now for a long time. I really relied on them.
Is there anything, I know obviously it's not like an Olympic year or anything, but in balancing the college with the Team USA, how do you try to do that? I mean, obviously staffs on both ends, I'm sure, help you tremendously, but how do you try to balance those two things?
Our coaching staff has been awesome, and the support from USA Softball to get the people that we really need to help support the women and the athletes. Of course, Cindy Ball's been my right-hand gal for sure. She's been helpful, but as have been, you know, Brian Colsey was new to our coaching staff this time around. He's been involved in the old school times back around the 2000s, but Mike Stewald, Tony Baldwin, Jimmy Colitis, Tim Walton, and Chris Malvo, those guys and gal Cindy they've been helpful. So it's just been kind of all hands on deck. We were able to have three different rosters this summer, so that personally was exciting to manage. We got to build a team in Canada for 10 days, and then moving on, we got to build on that success to then build our team for the Birmingham World Games, which was great. And then going on to the Japan All-Star Series, we had a whole bunch of rookies, and that was really fun to take them for the first time. Normally, I felt like I was always the first time goer to Japan being involved in USA Softball. I wasn't a former USA Softball athlete, so I had zero experience. But this time, we got to take a whole group of newcomers, and it was super fun to be able to just let them run free in Japan and understand what this game's all about at the highest level.
Yeah, we saw a few of those rookies and their experience in Japan, which personally, that's my favorite part, is the culture piece. Of all of the extracurricular activities that you all did, what was your favorite in terms of what Team USA got to do while in Japan?
There's so many first-time wow moments as an athlete when you go there. First and foremost, just to travel specifically, I think the trip, you know, it's 12 hours from LA. So that's a challenge. But I think my favorite thing is just watching them eat the different foods, be able to eat the, it's this like Choco Moroka Jumbo ice cream, waffle ice cream. You see the post all the time. So, you know, it definitely leaves you wanting more of those. And I think just in general, watching Japan and how they treat softball and watching our athletes just watch them take infield, how they present themselves in that country, how organized they are. This group really got to do a lot of things. We got to go to a festival in Fukushima, and it was really neat to be kind of center stage. These athletes got to be, you know, the highlight, as did Team Japan, of part of the festival. So that part, just seeing the culture, we got this thing called the happy coat. Everybody got their name on the happy coat. So someone had plan ahead, and you know, the new women on the roster that were added late, they even got the happy coat. So it was pretty cool to just watch the culture and see us be involved. You know, in the Olympics, we didn't get to do anything culturally in Japan. It was a lockdown, and respectfully so, we didn't step outside the Olympic Village. So that was somewhat disappointing, you know, just because you love being in Japan. But this time around, it was fun to take that group, and they got to fly be free pretty much, as long as they had masks on.
Yeah, and we saw at the end of that, you guys, a lot of people posted that photo of, you know, both teams coming together on the field and kind of talking about how they still want softball to get back in the Olympics for 2028 in LA. And we know it's not going to be in Paris, but there's a big push, and they're still deciding what might be the sports that can be in LA. And you've been very, you know, passionate about that. Can you kind of explain, you know, what you're doing to try to help that to become a reality here?
Yeah, I think, I mean, all three of us on the call get the big picture in terms of softball. You know, can we be an Olympic sport? Well, you look back in history, I mean, it hasn't been since just 96 that we were in the first game. So we have a lot of work to do in the world in terms of development. But I do believe that LA 2028 and the committee has a responsibility to these athletes that play this sport in this country, in baseball and softball, to support softball just like Tokyo 2020 did. And we can't assume, you know, being from the United States, how, you know, how important softball is to us. Well, it's not important to everybody. And I think, you know, looking at those athletes, the last two games we got to play, the last one game we got to play in Yokohama Stadium in Tokyo area, it reminded me of being at Dodger Stadium, the color of the seats, even the padded seats behind home plate. It just really was like, wow, we need to lobby for this. We need to, as a sport, whether it just is softball or softball and baseball, we need to put a movement out there and contact the powers that be in the LA 2028 committee. Because, you know, as much as we believe in the sport and much as we see it thriving in Birmingham at the World Games with 10,000 fans, at the College World Series with 15,000 fans, we just can't assume that it's going to happen on its own. So we really have to do the work. And I think the athletes, we left it with them, these rookies that were on the bus, and we said, this is our mission. This is, you know, whether you're on the team or not, like, you have your duty to be able to, like, lobby for this and contact the people on LinkedIn and put your stuff out there on Twitter, because it's not going to happen by itself. And those games that, you know, were put into, or softball that was put into the other past games, I look back at Don Porter's work and reading his book, like, it was a thankless job being the person to put softball on the docket and to lobby for softball. Like, we have to do the work because those people did it for us. So somehow I'm into that. I don't know exactly what to do. I'm not the biggest political mover of things, but maybe you guys can help us get that word out.
I think the great thing is there's this generation of athletes is very socially active like that in ways beyond sports. So if there was a group that could be the one to kind of hold that banner up and try to do that, I think this generation of athletes is more in tune to doing that than past generations. So maybe that's going to be a huge positive, using all their, like you said, their many tools to get it done.
Well, and I think there's strength in numbers, right? I mean, we've got almost 300 Division I programs. That's just Division I. You look into Division II, Division III, you look into NAIA, JC. And if every single athlete was to write a letter to LA 2028, that's a lot of letters that are in, whether it's an email, whether, you know, simply write and throw it in the mail. I think getting the word out there and getting people engaged and realizing that it's not a shoe-in for us to be in 2028, and it is imperative, and it's we need to do it now. I don't know that we have a lot of time left. So hopefully we can get athletes and parents and young players who love the game of softball to buy in and really rally around this and get softball back in 2028.
Yeah, I wish I could put text across my screen, but we think the woman who we should at least target, her name is Kathy Carter, bless her heart, but she's the executive of the 2028 LA Games. And so I think just more people that can follow and show that softball is something that could and should be showcased in LA. And I do think it should be at Dodger Stadium. I don't think it should be anywhere else but that. And you know, I think people in the U.S., when they're looking at the Olympics being played, even in 2021, when we were at Yokohama Stadium, you're watching it on the live stream or wherever. There's a thing about, you know, oh, well, softball deserves to be played on their own field. 100% agree. But certainly you can convert the baseball field. And just from a short-term standpoint, like the sensibility of it, it should be at a big stadium like Dodger Stadium. Like, it would be, you know, they do it in Japan. So it's not a problem. And one of the more, I guess, developed professional leagues is in Japan, and they play on all, you know, pretty much all baseball stadiums. And I don't see it as disrespectful. I see it as sensible, economical, and what we need to do right now to make it be a thing.
Yeah, totally agree. Until we get, you know, in 10 years, we get those softball specific huge stadiums like the sport's going to get, like the WNBA has now. So we'll eventually get there. It's just, you know, we're still not at that stage yet. So you're right. We can't, like, you know, baby steps here. But yeah, in D1 Softball Podcast, I know we're worldwide. So anyone internationally too listening to this, because we got a lot of college players that are repping those teams, maybe the international can contribute to show that it is growing. I know people don't think it is, but it is. It's making progress. It's just not fast enough for, you know, some of our, you know, we're very attention sat. Is not, the attention span's not long now, but it is growing and making strides. So, and we're seeing that in the college game, a lot of players coming over and playing. So, and on that note, we're starting fall here. It's already crazy how that's crept up. And how do you, as a program at Washington, how do you approach the fall season? What, in terms of just like your workouts and your games, what's kind of the strategy that you've used over your career there to get ready?
Well, that's a great question, because I think for us, it's a little bit different than the majority of Division I programs, because we're on a quarter system. And, you know, I was remembering a couple months ago being with Team USA and the other coaches, and they're like, oh, we got to get our fall calendar built. We got to get our fall schedule built. Well, we they're already starting, and they've started for now, what, 2 or 3 weeks. We haven't even really seen our team. They're trickling in, they're kind of doing their own workouts, but we legally, per the NCAA rules, get this, can't start until September 15th. Mind you, quarter baseball schools can start on September 1st, I believe. So there's a little bit of that, but being that there aren't that many quarter schools out there, Northwestern being one, I know that for sure, outside of our conference, Cal Poly being one, but there's several in the Pac-12 that run on this system. So we're a little bit slow to get going, but certainly we play as many contests as we can. We're playing 8 contests, I believe, and we play our local schools around here, Division II schools, and a couple of junior colleges, Seattle University. Many know that program. They've done great over the last few years, but we have them as the Division I school that's closest to us. So we don't have a lot of options, but certainly want to compete this fall and play some games. But we have an eager group, a group of super seniors that came back that want to make a push to make it to the College World Series. And so they're making sure that they're doing what they need to do to get this team rallied and going in the right direction.
Now, Heather, you've been one that's obviously been a part of this conference for a long time, the tradition of softball. What was your reaction when you saw that UCLA would be leaving the conference and going to the Big Ten?
Oh man, my first thought was that, okay, they're at Penn State mid-April. How's that gonna work? I'm not sure, but I get the economics of the, you know, the conferences and the realignments. I even went back into this, I saw this cool graphic that showed like conference movements, and looking back, you know, the Pac-12 started just more recently with the addition of Colorado and Utah. So that was kind of new movement for us. But back in the day, it was like Oregon, Washington, Oregon State. And then the LA teams added in like the 1918. And 1978, I think Arizona's added. So they're really, you know, conferences have had a lot of movement. And so this is just a time that, you know, schools that are needing money, schools that are needing different things. And, you know, it is all about the money. It's all about the TV contracts. And we get it, football and basketball and those titties of money at the end drive a lot of the decisions, and that's okay, that's fine. But I think Washington financially is in a secure position, and anything that the Pac-12 networks or the Pac-12 conference moving forward can do more for us can be a bonus. And so whether we end up getting that $38 million kickback from a conference one day or not, I think the University of Washington's here to stay. The Pac-12 institutions that are in the conference are here to stay. But I think anything financially that can benefit us more will only help all of us.
Yeah, I mean, I just think about UCLA getting to wear their parkas a little bit more. I think that was the biggest takeaway when UCLA transferred to the Big Ten. I'm like, oh, they're going to get to use those parkas other than just the one Washington trip.
and a beanie and right, all that stuff. But
well, there's that rumor about like building like a hub or like a hotel like in mid-America so they can all just stay there between, which right, you know, makes some sense when you think they have the money to do it. Just build your own little city there, like Pac-12, like a state, like a way station. So
yeah, I think the only thing that's somewhat disappointing is we made this move as a group of coaches to try to get the Pac-12 tournament going. You know, some of us were still kind of on the fence about it, and that's fine. But then it's like, okay, well, now what? We have our Pac-12 coaches meeting this coming week in San Francisco. So we as a group will learn a little bit more about, you know, any future engagements regarding that. But certainly losing, you know, UCLA is tough on the, you know, tough on the eyes. Like, that's a great school. It's always been a rival of Washington specifically, as far as I've known it, since our program has started. We always were travel partners. And Tara, you know that back in the day, being still a part of that piece, which was a challenge for everybody to do that whole road trip back between Seattle and LA on a weekend. But, you know, we'll miss them. We don't know anything about USC because they never added softball. So it doesn't really impact us, but UCLA, certainly, you know, it's weird, as, you know, being part of the conference forever, now that they're not, it certainly is going to be a change.
Yeah. I think the positive thing with softball is there's so many games in a season that you can still schedule some of these teams and still have, you know, more so than football, where you only have like, you know, you have a 9-game conference schedule maybe, and So there's enough maybe, you know, tournaments and openings where you can still kind of keep that alive more so than other sports. So if there is a positive, that's probably what my takeaway is from, you know, the impact of, you know, the breakup there. Well, we always, you know, we'd love to keep stuff on the field, but I'd love to find out, like, when you actually have free time. I don't know when that is, but what do you like to do outside of softball? What can we find you doing if you, like, someone gave you like a week where you couldn't do softball?
Oh man. Well, I'm a big skier and I love winter time. I have a van, and so my van, I can sleep in my van. So I'll be going in my van, cruising around and in the mountains. Typically, I have a kayak, an inflatable kayak, have a side-by-side now, cruising around the hills. But I like, you know, I really like our coaching staff, and so we like to hang out together. But definitely need time off and need rest at times. But I do like the outdoors, and I have two cats, and so I do like being home with my cats. They're cool kids. But yeah, I think being a quarter school and being coaching like internationally and having that schedule, it's very helpful to have this extra time that we do have. So I don't envy sometimes the semester schools I have to get back like on August 22nd. That's a challenge. So definitely try to balance my life a little bit.
Heather Tarr, hashtag van life. You got to post it. Yes.
Before I love it.
Skyrocketed. That was becoming quite common during the, you know, obviously the shutdown of society during the pandemic. So you were doing the hashtag van life too.
Yeah, I'm a van lifer.
Yeah. Well, I lived up where you lived all the time. I would be exploring those lovely views all the time too. That's awesome with Mother Nature. But
on. I found Kathy's information. So if you guys want to tweet Kathy, it's Kathy Carter. So Kathy Carter 28, that's her Twitter handle. So if anybody wants to send her a message on Twitter, and then we'll put in the show notes, we'll try and find an email for people to send emails to. That's for LA 2028. We'll get that to you all. So you can send her a letter on why softball should be in the Olympics.
And be polite, folks. We're not trying to like harass this woman. Just be very nice about why you think it's important. We don't need to be nasty. We know how social media can get. So let's keep it clean. Let's keep it, you know, hey, we love our sport. Let's do this. So it's great. Yeah. Listen to that. And well, Heather, we really appreciate it. This is awesome. We're sorry to take up some of this free time you still have before your fall practice.
Heather, thanks so much for joining us. Ree's Wi-Fi, sometimes it just goes out. I mean, it was great all the entire episode. And then all of a sudden it was done when she's saying thank you so much. But Heather, hopefully we'll have you back on. We know you got us out of the way, but maybe we'll get you on back during season.
Awesome. Well, thanks you guys. Appreciate you. And thanks for having me on.
We appreciate it. Sorry about that. See, you got through most of it though. We knew it happened. We knew it would happen.
We expired. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Heather Tarr, head coach, University of Washington, Team USA. Love that she's doing the van life as well. Great to have her as our first guest on the show. Excited to see the Washington Huskies this year and what she does with Team USA that now that she's at the helm.
Yeah, it was very interesting to hear some of the, you know, and cool to hear some experiences and kind of just also to the push to keep softball, to get it back into the Olympics, to try to, you know, in the LA games. Obviously that's a very passionate thing for the players. And I would really love to see some of those players get to experience an Olympics. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we've talked about the issues with the Olympic thing here. It's really, you know, we're very, you know, we have an American view of it. We get it's a huge sport here, but it needs to be, you know, all across the world. So hoping that happens, but it was really cool to get just her. And again, like just some of her when she does get time away from softball, just how she really kind of takes advantage with her cats and, you know, skiing and everything. So really enjoyed speaking with her. It's one we've tried to get for a long time. She's just always so dang busy and totally respect that. So I was really, really grateful that she could make some time for us.
So that is head coach Heather Tarr. And again, big push for LA 2028. And it's going to take our softball community to help push that to the forefront. Ree and I have talked at length about the challenges of it not being a urban sport or a sport that is easy to pick up across the world, but let's hope that we can get a push for LA 2028 and get it back on the docket. And that is it for our first show of the new year, new season. Ree, any final thoughts?
No, just everyone. I mean, we're starting to crank out. We're going to start to crank out some of these fall reports. I'm already talking to some coaches. It's pretty interesting. You always like, oh, what that, you know, you kind of like, it refreshes the mind. They're like, oh, and then you have this person coming in and hearing about their newcomers and getting some of their, you know, transfers. It's just, it's been really interesting to hear how the teams are already starting to blend together. So I think just be on the lookout for those, because I learned so much, you know, I'm like, oh, I forgot about that, or this person's here. So it's going to be really cool, because we'll hit almost every single, every Power Five program. And then a lot of the major quote unquote group of five programs, the mid majors in the softball. So it's going to be great if you just check the site out, because there's going to be so much info in there that you're going to want. And especially if you're going to go out to some of these games, because we got a fall schedule that's posted now. So if you're going to see some of these teams play, you can read about them ahead of time and go out and actually know who you're watching.
Yeah. So we've got those fall reports. They'll be on the site in the next week here. We're just finishing up our top programs, top 50 programs of 2022. That's on there as well. So take a look, let us know what you think. I'm Tara Henry for D1 Softball, Rhiannon Podkey. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll catch you all next week.